When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another episode of the Playlist Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of the Playlist. This time I'm presenting a recent interview I had with writer, producer, director, man of many hats, David S. Goyer, who is preparing for the release of his new project, the massive sci-fi TV series Foundation. For those unaware, David S. Goyer has been working in Hollywood for decades, having written many films that are iconic in the eyes of genre film fans, works such as The Dark Knight, Blade, Dark City, just to name a few. He's also long been associated with comic book movies and superheroes, but his upcoming Apple TV Plus series, Foundation, is something very different. Foundation is based on the classic sci-fi book series from writer Isaac Asimov and tells the story of the far future where the galaxy is ruled by a totalitarian regime and a rogue mathematician has developed a way to use math to predict the future. And once he predicts the fall of the empire, the leaders take him on and try to disprove his science as propaganda. In our discussion, we talk about science and how it's been politicized in this TV series, as well as our current state of affairs. We also talk about the task of adapting Foundation, which many thought was unadaptable. And then we also discuss why he's stepping away from superhero storytelling for the time being. But before I get to the interview, I got to tell you the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, and more. And if you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, or anywhere else you find your favorite shows. So without further ado, here's my interview with David S. Goyer, the writer creator of Foundation, which arrives on Apple TV Plus September 24th. Enjoy. Okay, so let's just get into it. This morning I spoke with Lee Pace and asked a similar question. So I want to start out with this because you adapted Foundation. So the premise of the story is that there's a scientist with a mathematical proof that the Galactic Empire is going to crumble and the Empire doesn't like this and they kind of scoff at his science and deal in politics. And it sounds an awful lot like 2021, but 30,000 years in the future or whatever. So I'm curious, as you're writing this, obviously you didn't know like the current state of affairs, but it seems awfully timely, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's eerily prescient. You have to remember though that we had written all 10 scripts before we started filming. So the episodes that you're watching were written 3 years ago. There's no question that climate change was a thing, although we weren't at the inflection point that we seem to be at right now. But a global pandemic was not even anything, well, most of us were even remotely cognizant of. I think it's clear when Asimov was writing the original trilogy that he was aware of the way that science can be politicized. That's one of the themes of the books. So it's one of the themes that we carried on in the TV show. But I don't think any of us could imagine at all how much science would become politicized today, how much things that seem to be objectively true would be questioned and regarded as subjective facts. That's something that we were all surprised by.
Yeah, definitely. And so just to get off the politics of it and to talk about Foundation, it's pretty exciting that this is finally happening, because for years as a big sci-fi nerd, I'm super excited about Dune and Foundation being coming out so close together. And these are both stories. Obviously you can't speak to Dune, but Foundation's a story that many thought was like unfilmable. And here you are, you're given this, you know, series of books and have to adapt it for a TV show. So I'm curious, was that ever at all intimidating? And was it just like, I just got to take that first step and go from there?
How many episodes have you seen?
A number of them, yes.
Do you think it's filmable now that you've seen them?
Yeah.
I think that, yes, it was intimidating. I was approached a couple of times in my career prior to this to adapt it as a feature or series of features, and I turned it down because I didn't think you could compress all of the ideas into a film or a series of films. I think it wasn't until about 6 or 7 years ago, with the advent of some of these big sprawling novelistic shows, that I started to think, well, maybe something like Foundation is possible. At the time, the rights weren't available. So about 4 years ago, the rights became available. And fortunately, Skydance wanted to make it as a serialized streaming show. And I thought, I'm going to give it a go. I don't know that it could have been adapted as a feature. I feel like the medium matured to where Asimov was, and the audience to a certain extent has matured in that regard. I feel like I know myself during the pandemic, I needed release. I needed refuge. So I loved nothing more than the ability to settle into some kind of streaming show that I knew there was 3 or 4 or 5 seasons of. My wife and I could watch something that could distract us from all the anxiety that we were dealing with. I guess the timing was right.
Yeah, it really was. And recently I spoke with the showrunner of Why the Last Man, which is a comic book series. And I asked her.
And a comic I love.
Yes. And I asked her about adapting a beloved franchise. And I want to ask you a similar question. When you sat down with these books, and Why is a 20-year-old comic, and this is, you know, what, like 70 years maybe? Did you ever like question whether there were certain things that were sacred and couldn't be changed, or did you kind of just look at it as a blank slate and not feel that beholden to the source material?
Of course we questioned that. People have a very personal connection to the Foundation books. They revere them. Even people that don't like science fiction, if you go into someone's library, you might see the one fantasy work would be Lord of the Rings. The one science fiction work would be Foundation. It's considered the greatest science fiction work of all time. It's the granddaddy of science fiction. So much of what we know of science fiction today was informed by Foundation. Of course, you have to approach it with reverence. But at the same time, the audience that's receiving the show today is not the audience that Asimov was writing to 70 years ago. So the way I approached it was I sat down with a legal pad, I reread the books, I wrote down what I felt were the most important themes and the characters and the through lines of the show, the things that that are essentially Foundation. And I reached out to the Asimov estate and I said, these are the true norths that I'm identifying. Do you agree that this is what makes Foundation Foundation? And fortunately, the estate and Robin Asimov said, yes, you've pegged all the essential elements. And I said, okay, here are a couple of liberties I'm thinking of taking. How do you feel about that? And I said, it functions as a metaphor. I can't write about a post-World War II environment. I have to write about the world today. Asimov was writing to a primarily male audience or virtually no female characters in the first book. That's not the case today. I'm thinking of Gender Flipping Gale. What do you think of that? Fortunately, the estate and Robin Asimov completely embraced that. She said that even her father recognized in his lifetime that if Foundation were ever adapted, someone would have to take liberties. It would have to be different. You have to approach it with reverence, and then you have to approach it as if, you know, someone were watching it for the first time, having never read the books and not even considering themselves a fan of science fiction. It's a tightrope walk that you have to do when you're doing it. And the audience will decide whether or not we were successful.
Well, I want to touch on a couple things. You mentioned like Gale being gender swapped and gender flipped. And you've done that to a few characters to actually have a female presence on the show, which is, you know, commendable. But you also created Brother Day, Dawn and Dusk. And there are other liberties, like you said. Are there any of those changes that you think like, oh man, I hope this goes over well? Because, you know, I'm playing with it a bit.
Look, I wasn't capricious about any of these changes. I mean, all of these changes Josh Friedman and I worked on the first two scripts, and a lot of debate went into the changes that we were talking about. And the main criteria was, is this emotional? The books are fundamentally books about ideas, about philosophy. Obviously, most of the action happens off screen. They're not particularly big on character. There are some memorable characters, but there aren't a lot. So the challenge of a streaming show is that people primarily tune in for the characters. They become invested in the fates of those characters. So we had to figure out ways of drama, of taking characters that could dramatize Asimov's themes. So you mentioned the genetic dynasty, the Kleons. Kleon is a character that exists in one or two of the stories, Emperor Kleon in the first book. But then he disappears, and then it's just a faceless empire after that. And in fact, the empire falls off completely off screen in the books. Harry Seldon predicts the fall of the empire. So what's the best extrapolation of a rigid power structure? It's the same guy cloning himself over and over and over again and trying to imprint his ego across the entire galaxy. That seemed like a great way to take Asimov's themes and build upon them through character. And what that then led, that was initially part of a plot convention and also a way to allow us to continue some of the actors on from season to season. But that led to all these wonderful little character moments, because even though the empire is monstrous, suddenly you realize they're all living in the shadow of Kleon the First, and they're all desperate to individuate and desperate to put their mark on the universe before their brief moment is gone. They're mayflies. And that allowed us as an audience to also empathize with these monsters. And for me, I'm not interested in depicting black and white. I'm interested in all the shades of gray in between the black and white. And so what started as a way of figuring out how characters could express Asimov's themes led to, I think, some really wonderful character moments throughout the season.
Yeah, I agree. So this is not your first rodeo when it comes to TV. You've been in TV for a number of years. I think back to Flash Forward as something I enjoyed. And I'd like to know, now that you've kind of seen TV evolve to the point where Foundation, like you said, can actually happen, what do you think are the differences between making those network TV shows 20 years ago or 15 years ago and now being, you know, given kind of a creative pathway to make Foundation in 2021?
Well, I wish I could go back in a time machine and tell myself 15 years ago not to work in television back then. I was always interested in serialized storytelling, even going back to, you know, ER or Hill Street Blues or, you know, St. Elsewhere. That's why I was so excited when HBO came along, shows like The Wire and whatnot, The Sopranos. I was never interested in episodic storytelling. And back then, that was the coin of the realm if you were working on network. It was episodic storytelling. You had commercial breaks, which I absolutely loathed. We don't have those anymore. There was a formula. You had to fit everything into 43 or 47 minutes. Now we can have an episode that's 43 minutes. We can have an episode that's 62 minutes. And that's incredibly liberating. So I'm happy to be working in television now as opposed to back then when we attempted to do something like Flash Forward.
Yeah, I not to get on a tangent on Flash Forward, but having read that book, I am curious, much like Foundation, that's a story that seems kind of very out there and very hard sci-fi. So
it's kind of my thing.
Yeah. But now you're given,
I like challenges, yeah.
Yeah, but now you're given the you know, the budget and the time and so you can make Foundation, which is great. So you've said before that when you pitched Apple this show, you said, I want 8 seasons and 80 hours, basically, of TV to make this, you know, to give it justice. Obviously, we don't have the mathematic formula to predict the future, but that's a huge undertaking for anything, you know. So I'm curious, if you only get this one season, do you think that laying the foundation of Foundation has been a worthwhile endeavor?
I do. I mean, Apple was well aware of the magnitude of the undertaking, and rightfully so, wanted to make sure that we were writing towards something, that we weren't just riffing. And so over the course of a few hours, we definitely presented a kind of superstructure for where the show would go, what the endpoint would be, where all the major characters would land. It doesn't mean that we can't adjust or that we can't shimmy, because the blessing and the curse of Foundation is that Asimov himself never got to the end of the story. He never finished the thousand-year journey. It was important to me that we lay a lot of groundwork in season one for storylines that hopefully will continue on in future seasons, that we plant some seeds. But it was also important to me that season one, you've probably only seen at most the first 8 episodes, there are 10, right, but that season one feel like a complete meal and feel like it also has a sense of closure. So I was trying to do both at the same time. I was trying to create something that if this is all we get, it's satisfying, but if this ends up being the first of 8, it's an amazing first chapter. And so hopefully the audience will feel the same way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm rooting for it for sure. As a big comic book sci-fi nerd,
I'm very excited about the possibility of future seasons, because season one necessarily has the burden of more exposition, of setting up some of the concepts. And in future seasons, I feel like it's kind of like jazz. And you can now elaborate on the themes and do some more interesting variations.
That's fun. So before I run out of time with you, I got to switch gears, because like I mentioned, I'm a big comic book nerd, and you're David Goyer. You've written Blade and Dark Knight and all that. So I got to ask you, people obviously are familiar with your work on the Dark Knight trilogy and then leading into Man of Steel. So at that point, I'm curious, because it seemed like you were positioned to be kind of one of the architects of the DC film universe. So I think you were even attached to a Green Lantern movie at that point. So do you ever stop and think, now that you've seen kind of where the DC film universe has gone, do you ever stop and reminisce on where you might have had plans to take it or want to, or would have wanted to?
I honestly don't. I mean, I had the experience on The Dark Knight with Chris, which is just about, I don't think you could ever imagine a better experience than those 3 films, and working with Chris and Jonah on those movies. They're kind of like the apex of comic book films. It was a delight to work on a version of Superman, but even when we were moving into Batman and Superman, I felt like there were a lot of things I had already said with comic books. And I was really eager to do something different. So right around the time that that was ending, the proposition of Sandman and the proposition of Foundation came up. And even though Sandman is based on the comic books, it's an entirely different kind of story. I had a really good run doing, you know, comic book adaptations, but I'm also really excited to not be doing them. There are only so many, at least for me, there are only so many stories I could tell about a person putting on a cape.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Sandman, another thing, you said you like a challenge. Boy, that's a challenge, huh?
Yeah. I mean, both of them, Foundation and Sandman, are long considered to be unadaptable. And it's the irony of the fact that both came to me at almost the same time isn't lost on me. It was very surreal working on both of them.
Yeah. So, like I said, you've got quite a career doing all sorts of films and TV shows, and you've been attached to a number of things that never actually came to be. So I'm curious, looking back, when you think of those projects that you might have done a draft on or developed that never came to be, is there one that stands out and you're like, man, I'd like a crack at that again?
At one point, I was going to do a version of Quatermass in the Pit with Alex Proyas that I think would have been really neat. There was a long-lost adaptation of that exists in the studio vault somewhere, at least on script form. That would have been kind of fun.
Yeah, wow. And I got to wrap up, but one last thing, since you, I forgot to mention it to Lee Pace, and you know him personally. He's the best Batman that never was, right?
We have never discussed that. I mean, yeah, now that you say it, I think he would be a pretty amazing Bruce Wayne, but I kind of have him in gold handcuffs now as Emperor of the Galaxy, so I'm not planning on letting him go anytime soon.
No, I remember watching Halt and Catch Fire thinking like, man, if this isn't like a weird Batman origin story, I don't know what is.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
All right. Well, thank you for speaking with me about Foundation. It's a great series, and I look forward to 80 hours. So thank you.
Thank you so much.